Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Anyway, is she married?
She has a marinovio, which is a term.
You can talk like that. You're Puerto Rican. I am
it's
gringo.
A term
what did you say?
In Spanish that people use, marinovio, is like husband boyfriend. So it's like your, I don't know how you say it in English.
So no, she's not married.
No, she's not married. Like a boyfriend.
A live-in,
I don't know. Live-in boyfriend.
Say it again. What's the word?
Marinovio. Because Mari is
marinovio.
From, yeah, Mari is from marido, which means
when I
husband.
Say it, it sounds like I'm casting a Harry Potter spell. It does not sound right. I'll leave that to you.
And then, I think that our country is right now in the most dangerous position it's ever been.
Confident that there will be a peaceful transfer of power in January 2025.
If Trump wins, no, I'm not confident.
Take a look at what happened.
You're considered the most liberal United States senator.
Somebody said that.
Campaign rally is not a press conference. Why hasn't she had a press conference? She's the vice president. She can handle the questions. Why not do it?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
4 months from now, we will have an incredible victory, and we will begin the four greatest years in the history of our country.
Hey, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Campaign Games, the game of survival for both the candidates and the voters. I'm Miss Sadie. I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hey, Rachel.
Hello. Hey, Rachel.
And today we're talking about, we're going to talk about the cabinet, okay? It's been really fun. It's been like the 4th of July / Christmas every day since the election. And everybody, I don't know about you, but I have been constantly refreshing my feeds for the cabinet picks. Everybody's making it like a comparison to the NFL draft, which I frankly could care less about the NFL draft, but I'm totally in on this.
Well, think about, has there ever been a past president that made the cabinet picks exciting? I can't remember any time ever. And I love this kind of stuff. I don't remember ever listening intently to hear who was going to be picked.
I know.
It's fun.
Okay. I think one of the things about this whole, like, why they're obviously, I mean, everybody's like, Trump had a mandate. We have the House, we have the Senate, we have the presidency.
Yeah, the stakes are high.
The stakes
sure.
are high. Of course, the left will also say, we have the Supreme Court. It's like, domination.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. We're taking over the world.
And they're like,
it's never happened before. Like, there's never been
I know.
A president before that had the Oval and both chambers. But yeah, I mean, everybody thinks that right now is the only time that
well,
has
and let's
ever
be
been,
honest,
so.
At any time that one party has full control, the other party freaks out a little bit. I mean,
do
Republicans freak out to the extent that Democrats or the left or progressives do? I don't think so. Because I don't personally, anybody in my circle doesn't, at least my fellow friends who are conservative or Republicans. But they're like in full freakout mode. And I think it's mostly just because it's not just the mandate, but if you put it in a historical context of this entire thing, it is that, first of all, Trump is an outsider. He just is. Even though he's been a president before, he is an outsider. He is choosing people in his cabinet that are outsiders. They're not not all of them are lifelong politicians that are bogged down with the traditions of or the establishment of how things are practiced within government. Mm-hmm. But also, can we talk a minute about, I've been thinking about this, looking back and like playing, what is it they call it? Like Sunday quarterbacking or whatever? I don't know.
Monday morning quarterbacking.
Okay, I have no idea. See, here's the deal. Sports, right? Whatever. I try to get some of these terms and I'm like, I don't know. So we had the 2020 happened. Trump lost the election, or the election was stolen, or stuff was rigged, however we want to put it. And we had Biden for those 4 years. Mm-hmm. And initially it was just like really upsetting and really annoying. However, if you really think about it, during those first four years that Trump had, he was brand new in the entire mm-hmm. thing. He has said that he was new in the whole thing. He didn't really expect to win. He was kind of surprised when he did win. And so he wasn't really prepared with a cabinet or for the transition when he first went in. So when he first went in, he appointed people that he admits were bad choices. And the swamp or the deep state or however you want to describe them were already like mobilized against him. Then Biden comes in and it kind of created this break from all of that. The investigations into Trump, I mean, obviously the DOJ went after Trump, but I'm talking about like within the House and the Senate, that all the impeachments, and then the people that were within his cabinet. So now mm-hmm. he spent those 4 years revving up for 2024, knowing everything he knew before, picking completely different people, actually being prepared this time with a transition team and with picks. Mm-hmm. And so I would almost say that I think in the grand scheme of things, not that I want to go through 4 years, I would have like, not like I was a fan of those 4 years and I don't want to go through 2020 again and all that kind of stuff. But in the grand scheme of things, I think it may have been better. Am I crazy?
Well, I think no, because I think he has learned a lot. And I think we can look at what I've noticed is something changed about Donald Trump. At least I think it has, from who Donald Trump was in 2016 is, in my opinion, markedly different than he is right now. Who he appears to be, the things he says, his cadence and how he talks. I mean, of course, he's Trump and nothing's
taken that away from him. He is more disciplined. I find him to be more disciplined this time around.
More disciplined, but he also seems to me just to be a little bit softer. And I think that time has... He was given that 4 years and a lot was exposed during that 4 years. And like he has said in those interviews, he made some mistakes and he learned from them. And like you said, had he had to jump right back in, I don't know if he would have had enough distance from
all the mess that had already happened in his first term.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been able to reflect enough. I don't think he would have had the opportunity to get to know some of the people that he is picking for his cabinet. Time does something to us. It provides wisdom, and a lot has been exposed about Washington, about politicians, lots of their intentions. There's been so many things that have happened in the 4 years that Biden's been in office. And I think a little space and distance gave him the opportunity to probably see a little bit more clearly what he was dealing with. And when I look at his cabinet picks, they are unconventional. They're not, to me, the typical go along to get along type of politicians. All of them have a stake in what they're doing. And it's less of the predictable, like you said, kind of swampy picks.
Yeah.
And to me, each one seems intentional, whether you like the intention behind them or not. It seems to me he's making very specific choices about who he wants to surround himself with and who he thinks he's going to be able to delegate to, who he's going to be able to kind of brainstorm and really work with. I don't know. Does that make sense?
That's no, kind it of, does. And I think
it's really interesting. Each pick is so interesting to me because I want to get inside his head and be like, okay, why this person? Explain it to me. Not that I'm, not that any of them are bad. They're just, it's all so interesting.
And to speak about that, so far what we have, just to kind of recap on the cabinet picks so far, the first one was Susie Wiles as chief of staff. First female
chief of
staff.
She's great. She's a bulldog. So
yeah. Everything that I've heard about her is really good. And she has been in politics for a long time. Like, she is knowledgeable mm-hmm. about this sort of thing. I think the most traditional and the most like on the nose that you would expect to be chosen is Susie Wiles. Mm-hmm. The borders are Tom Hooman. I mean, yeah. Hello.
Yeah, it's great. I love him.
He is so entertaining to watch. Like, mm-hmm. absolutely. I think John Ratcliffe is also a pretty traditional, safe, good
choice.
Yeah,
that seems like the most conventional pick he's made, actually.
Yeah, for director of CIA. He's a former congressman and everything. I think the only one that we both have been like really like is
Kristi Noem. Yeah.
Secretary of Homeland Security. I think that is a very high profile position to be giving to Kristi Noem. I just don't know. And I mean, I don't know.
I don't love it. We talked about it last time. You know our misgivings. We're not huge fans, but maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised. Maybe we'll like she'll knock our socks off and just be the best Homeland Secretary we've ever had.
And then, of course, there's DOGE, too, that's going on, which
everybody is still freaking out about it.
Still freaking out about.
I love the meltdown.
Which, by the way, they now have an official X account. So if you want to follow DOGE and see what's going on and what kind of things they're discovering within the government, they're already posting on X. Let me tell you, Elon is on fire for this.
He is on it. I've never seen him tweet as much as he has in the past, like, 48 hours. He's just sitting there like retweeting stuff like, we're going to get rid of it.
It's like that meme of Millet.
Whitney posted that basically like Elon and Vivek's first day in office. And it's just like slashing everything. Yeah. It's okay. Great. It's great. So,
that's been fun. But what we do want to talk about are the ones that have been named and that have been getting the most press, I guess, and the most pushback. First of all, we've already talked about the appointment to Secretary of Defense, which is Pete Hegseth, who the left loves to point out is a weekend Fox News host, or now former weekend Fox News host.
Yeah, I love that Whoopi Goldberg was emphasizing that he's only on the weekend. And then she was making fun of his last name. And my husband heard like the video and he just yells, "Your name is Whoopi. Come on." It's petty, but come on. Are you seriously?
Her real name. Like, she chose that name. That's not even her real name.
That's even worse. Yeah. That's even worse.
But there has been one thing in particular, which actually Rachel and I always have discussions like pre-show. Mm-hmm. And then she basically told me to shut up because she wanted to.
I like to know your authentic, like your organic response to things sometimes.
Yeah.
Instead of,
so she was like, "Go talk." And I'm like, "Okay."
Yeah.
So one of the biggest criticisms that are coming about Hegseth, besides that he's a weekend show host on Fox News, and I will say, if I'm going to be fair, and I'm going to give like this could be a valid concern kind of criticism, is that although Hegseth, yes, he has the educational degree of like Princeton and Harvard, which the left absolutely loves. He is a veteran. He does have 2 Bronze Stars. He has served. He has not been in a high level management position. You know what I mean? He's not
in the military.
In the military. He hasn't had control or say over entire departments that are like millions of people, and that is true. And that is probably, I think, a fair concern and criticism. Although I will say that he has put his ideas out there and his concerns publicly, which I think is one of the reasons why Trump chose him. Specifically, the issue of how DEI and wokeism, however you want to label it, has infiltrated the military to the detriment of the lethality of the military, which is really what should be a priority.
Right. Like, yeah, I think that's a valid, I think someone can ask, well, do his qualifications reach to the level that we need at the top brass? But I would argue the people that have served and been
done great.
Yeah, it's not going that well right now. I mean, we have record low enrollment in the military. There's not the what I think for Pete. We're on a first name basis. What I think is an asset that he has. He's young. He very much gives off what I think the aura that he gives off, or his personality, the way he looks. He's
the rank and file military.
Yeah. Like, I think what he offers is a different kind of role model for young people to look up to, when, or at least to kind of have in their mind when they're thinking military. I think he's the type of guy that would get younger men excited to serve in the military again. And we don't have that same
enthusiasm or
it's missing,
for the
obviously.
Military.
We can't, not only because there's not the excitement to serve our country anymore, which is so sad that that's waning, but also because our country is out of shape. We have record numbers of young men being too fat to be able to enroll in the military. I mean,
I think he'll definitely attract maybe and help recruitment specifically.
Yeah, I think so. I think he has that going for him.
Yeah. And and one of the things that he's really been called out about recently is that during that Sean Ryan interview, he was specifically asked by Ryan that you're opposed to women in combat. And he was like, yes. Now, I love it because of, as usual, it's clipped. Like, he's like, says, yes, I don't think women should be in combat. And then like, that's the end of the clip. And then like, for example, on TikTok and other social media profiles, you got a bunch of people, or women, I should say specifically, that are like all with their undies in a wad or whatever, because he says that women shouldn't be in combat. Look, I don't think women should be in combat. Neither do I.
Great. We agree. I saw that clip. And of course, every single feminist and man feminist posted it ASAP, as in a gotcha. Like, look at this guy. It's the patriarchy. Look at him with his Christian values and also not wanting women in combat. What a jerk. And I'm like, guys, 95% of people think this. They just don't say it out loud.
Well, not women, only that, how often have we heard everybody start to freak out the moment that it's like, women's equality, let's do the draft, women might get drafted. And all of a sudden, the women, like the most progressive liberal, they don't want to get drafted. Okay.
I mean, heck, the second that there's like a spider in the house, women are like, I don't want to touch it. It's such a silly thing to be bent about. We can disagree about it. And if you really want to go into the military, do a combat role, and that's like your passion in life, well, then fine, whatever. But I just think that it's not wrong to acknowledge that men and women are built different for all of time, throughout all of history. It was always a mandate that the men go serve and protect their country and their families. This is not some weird, fringy type of... They're trying to make him seem like he is a Christian nationalist, crazy...
patriarchal,
keep women,
misogynist.
Yeah, keep women at home and pregnant type of guy. And it's like, meh, come on.
If they had kept playing the clip, they would have seen that what he then goes and explains is, first of all, he makes a case as to why. Primarily the case being that what has happened is that women who would be support roles in combat. So support roles are like, for example, providing certain, they're not infantry. They're not in a squad where they're on the front line. Mm-hmm. What they are is like supporting in regards to, I don't know, like water or medical or even a helicopter or those sort of things, which I don't have an issue with women flying helicopters or planes. He's specifically talking about infantry and that
frontline combat.
Exactly. And then what ended up happening is to have more women in those combat roles, they began to lower standards.
And look at where it's gotten us.
Exactly. Which is a problem. And then even the Marines, I believe, did a study and they showed that platoons or squadrons, or I don't even know what the freaking term is because I'm not in the military, but groups of people that shoot guns, when they were all men, they would perform better than them when they were mixed gendered. So he's just put, and now he did say, if you find some G.I. Jane superwoman that is able to deliver and work and meet those physical requirements that where they were before, that mm-hmm. was what was expected of men, then fine. She
cheers,
can,
but
she,
that just doesn't happen that often.
No,
it just doesn't.
It's very
and,
rare.
Yeah. And we, it's not wrong to acknowledge that instinctually in their DNA, men, they will almost always default to protecting a woman. And that can be super problematic when you're on the front lines and you're fighting alongside a woman. They are not going to look at her the same way that they're going to look at their fellow bro. And if it comes
that's
down to it,
that's just a patriarchy, Rachel.
Yeah, that's right. And I like the patriarchy. So people are going to have to deal with that because it's not even just patriarchy, but it's biology.
Yeah.
They're going to default to protect her first when really that's not what they need to be there for. That can't be their first instinct. It's distracting. And I have heard other combat veterans say this exact same thing.
And it's just
unusual.
Not for, especially since the last 4 years, it hasn't been an acceptable thing to discuss. And so nobody discusses it. Nobody pushes back on it. Everybody's kind of upset about it. And then we end up where we are right now, which is specifically why Hegseth has been nominated, because he's been very vocal about.
Well, and it's why he'll be great, because he's not afraid to say things. So cheers.
Then the other main talking point that, of course, like he's a Christian. He has Christian tattoos on him. He's in the military. He's a white man. So,
oh, no.
He's a Christian nationalist or a known white supremacist.
All Christians are Christian nationalists now. All of them.
No.
That's just what we're going to be.
Now, that's floating around out there, but really, are we surprised?
No. They have nothing else. Like, they've got to criticize that kind of thing.
Specifically,
mad at him about?
He told a story about this tattoo on his chest, which is like a Templar cross.
Yeah.
And that it being associated with white supremacy, and he was actually pulled from... Yeah, it was...
Bye,
no,
Felicia.
No,
it's so stupid.
And a very traditional Christian, like, it's a freaking cross.
I don't
okay?
expect them to know anything about that. So I guess I'll just chalk it up to them having no knowledge about religion or what they're speaking of.
So,
well, and what I love about him is that he is all about classical education and homeschooling. He's given shout outs on the Sean Ryan Show and other podcasts he's done that I've heard him in. He's dropping like classical conversations for you homeschooling moms out there.
Yeah.
He talked about in one clip I saw on X yesterday, he was discussing, because he is a grad from Harvard and Princeton, and the host said, so if your kid got a full ride to Harvard, or
like,
if your
no.
kid got accepted into Harvard, would you let him go? Or do you want him to go? He's like, absolutely not. No. And he's like, basically, I have like 5 colleges my kids can go to. And I was like, that's it. I love him, because I say that all the time. My kids can go to like these 5 schools. All the rest of them. That's it. So he's solid. And he's written a couple books, and I have not read them, but I was talking with some people in my community about him. And resoundingly, everybody's like, that his books are great. Like really, really good. So
very cool.
I like him. I think he's a good pick.
It's just like that's the pushback that we're hearing. The other one that got a lot of attention, which I was getting a lot of questions on because everybody wanted to know. What about Tulsi? When is Tulsi going to get an appointment? Where are they going to put Tulsi?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tulsi is Director of National Intelligence. Now,
bam.
I know. It's totally on point. I think it's a great pick or a great appointment. If you don't know what the Director of National Intelligence does, to give you just a quick synopsis, it was a position that was created post 9/11, specifically because one of the big issues that was discovered that mm-hmm. contributed or brought about the attack of 9/11. I don't want to get into conspiracy theories or anything. But anyways, the point is that agencies weren't communicating with each other, intelligence agencies specifically. So this director, this department was created in order to facilitate how these agencies communicate with each other, also to collect and evaluate all of the information from these agencies. And specifically, her position is the primary position that will be providing this intelligence information to the president. So, I mean, it's kind of like a president intelligence secretary kind of. Yeah. You know what I mean?
She's basically like she's an overseer. She's the general contractor of all these groups of people.
So, and it's really interesting because she ended up on like a no-fly list. She got that 4S designation, which
thanks Biden.
I know, which would have come from these agencies. And now
I'm assuming she's going to take herself off of that. So
probably.
So people are, of course, floating. I think you're going to need to write another article because now the claws are out. Everybody's saying that she's
a Russian asset.
Yeah, she's a Russian asset and has ties to Russia and Iran and stuff. It's like, gosh, you guys are really they're digging deep. They're really each of these picks is just
the primary source of those criticisms. First of all, is Hillary Clinton, by the way, because she did an interview or something like that. And she brought that up. And specifically,
well, she's super trustworthy. So we definitely should pay attention to what she says.
Yeah. But specifically, Tulsi Gabbard is not, even though she's military and she has served in the military, she is not pro-war. And I think you see that a lot from people within the rank and file, especially in the military. They're not exactly pro-war for obvious reasons.
Right.
She is someone that values strength, but she doesn't want to go to war over it. So, and because of her criticism specifically on proxy wars and warmongers and the industrial complex, she has been attacked as her views aligning, quote unquote, with Putin or Assad. And because of that, she's been labeled either a sympathizer or an asset, which there's no evidence of that.
Of course not.
And is completely baseless. And it's simply because she has, even when she was a Democrat within the Democrat Party, she has consistently pushed against the grain of the establishment. And so they attack her.
All of these appointments, what I love is that what you have to do is you have to look at who is hating on the cabinet picks, and it tells you everything you need to know, because each one of them, and the ones we're going to talk about next too, they all push up against the norms and what's to be expected and how the sausage is made. Specifically when she's pushing up against, like you were mentioning, proxy wars and whatnot, that's such a topic right now because we're involved in so many places around the world, which someone could argue is dangerous when we have a weakening military in and of itself. So when you're putting people like Tulsi, like RFKJ, like Pete Hegseth in these positions where they're very clearly stating ahead of time, I'm going to go in there and shuffle some stuff around, the rank and file politicians are squirming because this has never happened before, truly. You might have had like one kind of off the wall cabinet pick per presidency before, but I mean, he's just bringing in all the outsiders. And I can guarantee all these people sitting in these federal agencies are going, am I going to, what's going to happen?
Well, and that's on day one of the stories is that some people are, that they're panicking, that they're threatening to resign, which is actually kind of funny because DOGE is out there and we're looking to cut expenses. So like, I'm sure there's ridiculous redundancies within these agencies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you take yourself out, then thanks for the assist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Course, we're fans of this. So we're just kind of, but of course there will be a period of, what's the word I'm looking for? Adjustment. Where maybe short staff or people, areas that have to be restaffed or cuts that we might feel, but these are the pain or the growing pains or lack of not growing pains, because that's the point, that we're going to have to go through to get out to the other side. And I'm very hopeful for what is out on the other side.
Yeah. Now, I mean, what I think is important to remember is on both the Republican and Democrat side, there are people who have been calling for reform within establishment, Washington, D.C., inner workings for a long time. Including myself, I'm always talking about things need to change. This is our two-party system, whether you love it or you want more options, the way we are working right now is not working.
Well, and it's stagnant.
It's stagnant, and we are going through a period of there's very little growth in our economy, in our military. We are drowning in debt. The politicians are not getting along. Everything is 50-50. Everything's split. Tons of division. And I'm not saying that this is going to bring about a huge kumbaya movement between Democrats and Republicans, but for those of us who are like, what's always the same? It's always the same in Washington.
I'm very hopeful.
It's always the same. I hope that it shakes things up. This is going to be spearheading a more permanent change.
This could be an experiment that goes completely to crap. I don't know, but I am actually very hopeful. I don't think that's going to happen. It's actually really funny. You see on social media, it's like, oh, do you have buyer remorse yet? I hope you like it. And I'm like, no, absolutely.
All of us
not.
Are like, great. I feel even better about my vote for Donald Trump now.
I'm like excited every day.
Yeah.
So then the next one that we're going to talk about, because we still got two more that are quite controversial. Mm-hmm. First is RFK Jr., which was officially announced and appointed or nominated, let's say, because they're not appointed yet, nominated for Secretary of Health and Human Services. And let me tell you, they are freaking out. Jake Tapper did this whole thing with, oh my gosh, their CNN health commentator, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, right?
Oh, yeah. So, he's going to hate that pick.
So they did this whole thing, and like you can tell Tapper is upset and stressed out.
Yeah.
And I really thought it was funny that this, because specifically, and I'll play the clip here for everyone so you guys can hear it, but it goes over to ask for Gupta's questions or his opinion. And
does
he specifically
just look like he's nauseous?
Well, he looks like he's dying inside a little bit, but specifically, he brings up how HHS also. That the CDC is under HHS.
And the National Institutes of Health. I mean,
and it's like,
really?
Well, yeah, that's the whole point, bro.
Yep.
To steer clear of politics, but this really isn't about politics because this is somebody who has been, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has been pushing quackery, who has been pushing lies, who has been pushing conspiracy theories. You've been talking to experts in the health community, the medical community, preparing for him, RFK Jr., to be given some sort of role in health. What have they said to you?
Well, you know, it's not often that the entire medical and public health community is going to be in lockstep on something, but they're pretty close on this in terms of their significant concerns, horror even. Somebody said to me today, I can't think of any single individual who'd be more damaging to public health than RFK. Keep in mind, I think if the reporting's correct and the job is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, that comprises the CDC. You know, we just got through this pandemic, comprises the FDA, comprises the NIH. He's talked about wanting to basically strip funding for infectious diseases overall. Again, just coming out of this pandemic with concerns about other viruses and things out there.
But I thought it was funny because he goes and he's like, remember, we just went through this pandemic and COVID and da-da-da-da, as if they didn't completely gaslight us and like
for
coerce
years.
People into submitting to these ridiculous guidelines,
policies. You reminding me, Sanjay, is getting me even more excited for RFKJ to be in charge of it because, wow, you guys made a disaster of that.
You're not exactly helping your case. And by the way, I don't know if you saw this or remember this, but Gupta went on to Joe Rogan and Rogan called him out because of how he was commentating and on board.
Well, he was complicit in so much of the peddling of misinformation and making people like Joe Rogan look like an idiot for just asking questions.
Yeah.
So.
Well, specifically, Rogan was like, you said that I used horse dewormer, which was not the case at all.
Yeah.
You lied.
Yep.
5 days later, I was negative. And I do have the natural antibodies now. Why would I take a chance in getting vaccinated on top of that?
By the way, I'm glad you're better. I'm glad it only lasted a day.
You're probably the only one at CNN that's glad.
No. We're not.
The rest of them are all lying about me taking Horks medication. And we should talk about that.
That bothered you.
It should bother you, too. They're lying at your network about people taking human drugs versus drugs from veterinary.
Calling it a horse dewormer is not a flattering thing. I get
it's
that.
It's a lie. It's a lie on a news network. It's a lie that's a lie that they're conscious of. It's not a mistake.
Yeah.
They're unfavorably framing it as veterinary medicine.
Well, the FDA put this thing out. You saw that. Did you see that thing that the FDA put out?
What did the FDA put out?
It was a tweet, and it was snarky. I admit it. They said, you are not a horse, you are not a cow, stop taking this stuff, or something like
that. Why would you say that when you're talking about a drug that's been given out to billions and billions of people, a drug that was responsible for one of the inventors of it making
the Nobel Prize
in 2015.
15, yeah.
Yeah, no, a drug that has been shown to stop viral replication in vitro. You know that, right? Why would they lie and say that's horse dewormer? I can afford people medicine. This is ridiculous. It's just a lie.
I don't think anyone is thick.
But don't you think that a lie like that is dangerous on a news network when you know that they know they're lying? You know that they know that I took medicine. Like, here it is. This is ivermectin.
You got
this
it with
it right
you.
Here. Somebody gave it to me.
All right, hang on. The thing is, we're like going so fast. Like, I feel like I'm missing.
Do you think that's a problem that your news network
it was not,
lies?
Well, I don't.
Dude,
what did they say?
They lied and said I was taking horse dewormer. First of all, it was prescribed to me by a doctor.
Yeah.
Along
they
with
shouldn't have said
a
it was
bunch
horse.
Of if, other if medications.
If you got a human pill, because there were people that were taking it, the veterinary medication, and you're not, obviously. You got it from a doctor, so that it shouldn't be called that. Ivermectin can be a very effective medication for parasitic disease, and as you say, it's probably, you know, I think what, 250 million people have taken it around the world?
More,
I get that.
Way more.
So,
way more. Billions of people have taken it.
That was uncomfortable. Awkward.
So, very amusing to me. The reaction has been panic. I mean, yeah. AOC, in addition to going on MSNBC and talking about Tulsi Gabbard, also brought up RFKJ and how dangerous he is. And it's really interesting to me because, again, the Democrats for a long time were anti-Big Pharma. And now they just seem to be like completely in defense of Big Pharma and
right.
just the accepted, I don't know, like all of these vaccines, like honestly, to not even question or not even be willing to question how our medical system and all of these vaccines and the food that we eat has been literally force fed to us in order to profit these companies who also there is like a cycle there of yep. people within the FDA then going over to these private companies and vice versa.
Yeah.
Like there's conflicts of interest are rampant within these departments.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, anyone who even remotely questions it is just labeled as like a loon or a danger to our health. And that's what's happening right now with RFK.
Yeah. And it's really, to me, the attack on RFKJ has been the most like sad to watch. How they viciously attack him in the media and his own family.
And misrepresent things he says.
Oh, absolutely. And anybody with eyes can see it. And so I have to believe that all of them know exactly what they're doing. And it is really, it's sad how they've made him look just like you said, a kook. And so it makes it all the more sweet when he showed up at one of Trump's rallies and everybody just went nuts because there is this huge movement of Republicans who are going, this something's off. This is not right. We are vaccinating our children at a much higher rate than any of us were vaccinated. Our kids are more unhealthy than they've ever been. Chronic illnesses. So many things are happening to where parents are waking up and going, like myself, I even wrote about it last night. I vaccinated our girls according to schedule. There was no question. You just were told this is what you do. And I'm able to now, being older with a baby, my fourth, going, something's off. I want to learn more. I'm going to learn more about why we do what we do. And when you start to kind of dive into it, you realize we have been sold a bill of goods, really. And it's not working. And so someone like RFKJ who comes along and has new ideas, you realize just how in the bag politicians are for these for the lobby and for big pharma, big medicine, basically. And even people like AOC who want to brand themselves as new and fresh and free thinker. It's like, no, you
should be back able, in with the establishment.
Anybody who questions what's happening is going to be labeled as controversial. It's not controversial to ask questions. And then when you get new information, you do things differently. And that's one of the things specifically that people say that RFK Jay is anti-vaxxer, and he is specifically
no,
said,
he's not.
Not.
If you listen to him, he is not anti-vaxxer.
He's just
he's
like,
not.
He's advocating for knowing more about these mm-hmm. vaccines, for the companies to be responsible for right. vaccine injuries, that they actually be held liable for those sort of things, mm-hmm. which they are currently not. And
someone and then, should ask questions about that. It's not wrong to ask questions. Why is this?
Yeah. And then the other thing being like, why is it that here in the United States, the schedule is so aggressive compared to mm-hmm. other countries, and not like I'm talking about like other Western countries who right. we often compare ourselves with. And then most recently, one of the
why is it why is it legal for them to put certain things in our food here in the States that it's illegal to put in food in other countries? Like,
and
why,
I think
we should be able to ask
like,
questions about that.
Those are
absolutely
basic questions. Valid questions. And then I thought it was
normal
really
things to wonder about.
AOC on MSNBC also brought up this idea of like RFKJ wanting to shut down health clinics in rural areas. I'm like, or that he could possibly
come on,
want
lady.
To do that. I'm like, where are you getting that from? He's literally
they're desperate. They're just desperate.
Opposite of that. The
right,
literal
right.
complete opposite of that. So it's again yeah. just wanting to fear monger. By the way, just random side point. Do you think she's pregnant?
AOC. I don't know. Someone yeah. said she had a glow. Like
she has a glow, and I just saw her. She looks like she's hiding something behind that jacket. Anyway.
Ooh, no. What
okay.
do you guys think out there? Do you think AOC's
well,
pregnant? I don't
there's
know.
There's this video, and she just did a sit down in like her jacket and the way she's sitting, and she's just looking oh. a little fuller. Oh. I was like, I think she might be pregnant. But anyway.
Is she married?
She has a marinovio, which is a term.
What? Whoa. You can talk like that. You're Puerto Rican. I am
it's
gringo.
A term
what did you say?
In Spanish that people use marinovio is like husband boyfriend. So it's like your, I don't know how you say it in English.
So no, she's not married.
No, she's not married. Like a boyfriend.
A live-in?
A live-in, I don't know. Live-in boyfriend.
Say it again. What's the word?
Marinovio. Because Mari is
marinovio.
From, yeah, Mari is from marido, which means
when I
husband.
Say it, it sounds like I'm casting a Harry Potter spell. It does not sound right. I'll leave that to you.
And then novio is boyfriend. So it's like a,
got
it's
it.
A joining there. Sorry. There, everybody just lost. You guys learned a little lesson. Marinovio. So, yes. So she's not married, but she does have a life partner.
I see.
And
okay.
by the way, her life partner is an evil white man. So.
Oh, oof, that's inconvenient for her.
It's really funny. Anyway. And then finally, the one that has brought up the most escandalosos is escándalo is Matt Gaetz as Attorney General. Okay,
yeah.
let me play. Okay, I just wrote a pretty long article on my Substack laying out literally almost everything about why people hate Matt Gaetz and what's going on with Matt Gaetz. And then
it's very detailed. If you yeah. have any questions about Matt Gaetz, you should read.
I have a follow-up,
really
too, that is coming, and I highly recommend that you go check that out because we do not have enough time in the remainder of this episode to go through
to
everything.
To go over all of it.
But, first of all, if you don't know who Matt Gaetz is, congratulations. You are not a political junkie like us. So Matt Gaetz was, because he resigned, a congressman in Florida. One of the reddest districts in Florida, by the way. I forget which one, but, you know. There's and then as soon as he got the nomination, mm-hmm. he resigned from Congress, which also includes a lot of like scandal, but I'll bring mm-hmm. that in, which I think is very confident of him to resign when he hasn't been confirmed.
Yeah, because then, I mean, there are the chances of him not being confirmed are
pretty
high.
Now, they are high. The argument from the left is that he went ahead and took the opportunity to resign because he has been under investigation by the ethics committee for possible sexual relationships with a minor, drug use, and I think something else. I can't remember the third thing in my article. Anyway, and that the ethics committee was going to be releasing a report here in the next coming days. And because of that, he went ahead and resigned. Because now that he's no longer a member of Congress, that removes any jurisdiction that the mm-hmm. committee may has over him because he's no longer a congressperson. So now the claim is that he went ahead and resigned in order to thwart the release of that report.
It's a valid, possible. It's very possible. It is possible. I don't think that's
going off the rails.
No.
No, I don't think it's insane either. And actually, I mean, some might.
Yeah. Brilliant. The other thing is that Johnson also pointed out that with him resigning right away, this allows them to quickly move into a special election in Florida, that they could very possibly have another representative already to be sworn in when they swear in the next Congress. Which
Florida's
is very
getting all kinds of press because they're going to have to pick someone to replace Rubio, too.
And that's one of the things is that there has been a concern that Trump has picked off some members of Congress, which will need to be replaced. And we still, and we have a, even though we have control of the House, it's a very narrow majority. And so it's not like the Senate, where the Senate is appointed. So if you have a Republican governor, he's going to appoint a Republican senator. But when you are dealing with the House, it has to go to special election, and it's possible that you could end up losing one of those seats. And Gates says that the reason that he did it is that he wants to ensure that we maintain control of the House, which is also a valid point.
Yep.
So both of these are valid. Now, one of the things that you will not hear, which I cover in my article, is that this investigation specifically about his possible sexual relationship with a minor is a 17-year-old, and it was investigated by the DOJ because there was a, he had some affiliation with a tax assessor, a Florida tax assessor, and I forget their name, Joel something, but they pled guilty to, I think he pled guilty to sex trafficking, but what he admitted to was that he had a relationship with someone who had a profile on one of these websites, and she was actually underage, but the profile said that she was of age. And then I guess in the process of taking her maybe across state lines at some point for a trip, that is what elevated it to sex trafficking. So he pled guilty to that. He admitted that he should have known better, that maybe she wasn't of age. Right. And in that, in the process of that investigation, Matt Gaetz gets kind of pulled into it. The DOJ includes him in that investigation. And at the end of the day, a Biden DOJ, because this happened in 2001, decided not to seek charges.
Wait, 2021.
Sorry, 2021. I went back way back in time. So this is during Biden, 2021. The DOJ decided not to press charges. I think it even, if I'm not mistaken, went before a grand jury and they took a pass on it, because there was not sufficient evidence and because of issues with credibility about the witnesses. Now, the same witnesses.
But you won't hear any of that.
You won't hear that.
You won't hear any of that.
So, like, the actual. So he was like, "This, there's a nothing here. Let's move on." But then the ethics committee decided to go ahead and do it. And allegedly that was spearheaded by McCarthy, which then created bad blood between Gates and McCarthy, even though Gates won't admit to that.
Which we watched play out. We watched that play out with the Speaker of the House dealings.
All of that isn't covered in my article. So that's the scandal that is around him. Now, also, Matt Gaetz does not make friends in the House.
Yes.
He has minimal
friends.
He's
not wildly popular, even within his own party.
Yeah.
People are like, please,
same thing goes with the Senate, because he has criticized openly leadership and people within the Senate. So he's not a back scratcher. He's not someone that, like, he is a disruptor. He's also kind of a cartoon. There are stories about him about not being, he's kind of like a frat boy.
Yeah. Like, you don't like, want your daughters hanging out with him. But he's married now. I mean,
he just seems to have calmed down.
Maybe.
Just because you're a degenerate frat boy, like, I don't know, 5 years ago or whatever.
That doesn't make, it doesn't make you, a criminal.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
So there is that. Now,
I mean, he's a firebrand. He says things out loud. He is not like, he is a very vocal Trump supporter and very loyal to Donald Trump. But he's also extremely vocal in what he thinks, and he's not afraid to say it. And that can make you some enemies. And he has quite a few on the Hill. So,
yeah. Now, if you want to put on for those, like, if I'm going to be like, and a lot of our listeners appreciate a little bit of conspiracy and whatever. So if you want to play a little bit of a conspiracy game, which is one that is mostly coming out from the left, it is that Trump, he is very loyal to Trump. He has been very defensive of Trump. He went toe-to-toe with Merrick Garland during the hearings on weaponizing the DOJ. He is an attorney. He is a graduate from William & Mary. Mm-hmm. And I have seen his questionings in during these committee hearings. He is a gifted cross-examiner. Okay,
yeah, for sure.
So to say that he doesn't have the experience,
the chops.
Yeah. The chops.
People are saying he's unqualified. And I'm like, well, but if you've watched him, I mean, he's a skilled orator in the sense that he is like quick on his feet. He's mm-hmm. able to, like you said, in the cross examinations, like he's a quick thinker. He's sharp. So.
And he is not a pushover, and he's not
he is no shrinking violet. Like, he is going to tell you exactly. Have you seen that clip that was going around X when they were asking about, you know, so the ladies march, like,
yes.
So the women, the pro-abortion women, fat and ugly. And he said, yes.
Yes.
And then they're like, well, what would you say to people who are offended by that? He's like, stay offended. Like, just very, he's just going to say it. He's just going to say whatever he wants. Can't stop him.
He triggers a lot of very strong feelings. Mm-hmm. So you may, as our listeners, you might like him, you may not, but this is what we have now right now. Now, one of the conspiracies is that because he's been loyal to Trump, Trump is helping protect him and has given him this appointment in order to give him an out to avoid the release of this ethics report. Mm-hmm. And that he's kind of being, and that he maybe knows this ahead of time, but he's kind of putting up as a distractor and a quasi sacrificial lamb during the confirmation hearings, because these confirmation hearings are politics. And so mm-hmm. if you want to make it seem like that they are all going through the ringer and you're mm-hmm. not giving Trump a complete win, then maybe one of them. Possibly
has
two
to get
of them
picked off.
Has to get picked off. And so yeah. Gates is being presented as the option to get picked off. And then maybe he has a backup choice that he would prefer to get in, or he believes might be more likely to get in. And that once Gates picked off, he'll present that backup choice. So that's kind of like the strategy idea about it. Now, here's the deal. I'm going to point this out. So this claim about avoiding the ethics committee, if you think this stuff isn't going to start leaking, give me a break. Okay.
Where have you been?
Where have you been? This is going to start. Actually, in fact, as soon as I published my article last night, ABC reported some information on who the witnesses were and what they said before the committee. That has already leaked, which I'll be covering in my next article. So the leaks have already begun. The other thing is that if you think that he's not going to face questioning on this issue specifically during the confirmation hearings,
where have you been?
Yeah, exactly. Where have you been? So this whole claim of like he's trying to avoid the ethics committee.
No, he's going to go straight into like he's going to be defending his life on that conference.
And it's going to be out for the public. Yeah. So unless
and it should be wildly entertaining, if I'm honest, like I'm very curious. All of this must be televised. Like I will be watching all of these confirmation hearings.
Yeah.
Because they're all so antagonistic to each one of these picks in very specific ways. So I just can't wait. The Democrats are going to think that they are going to war for democracy.
Yeah,
to save democracy. Yeah. I'm serious.
I know.
This is how serious they are.
Specifically when it comes up to Gates, I fully expect this to be like another Brett Kavanaugh kind of performance, except mm-hmm. that Brett Kavanaugh is a lot more, I mean, he was going to be Supreme Court Justice, so he was a lot more diligent and like controlled and
measured. And Gates will not be measured. I can't wait for it.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend investing in some stock at Oral Redenbacher because the
yes, seriously,
America is going to be eating copious amounts of popcorn during these hearings. Okay, so that's kind of a summary on the drama around Gates.
Well, and there might be some more today. What were you going to say? What were you going to ask?
Well, do you think that they'll make it through confirmation? Any of these picks?
I do. I think. I mean, they have to, right?
Yeah. So
I think Pete Hegseth will make it through confirmation. I don't see a problem with really any of them. I mean, Matt Gaetz, he's got an uphill battle there. Because, I mean, honestly, yes, we have a majority, but all it takes is three
well, and specifically,
four Republicans to go, nah, I'm not, and yeah, to side with the Democrats. So I think Matt Gaetz is, he has an uphill battle. RFKJ, they're going to give him a hard time, obviously.
And Tulsi, too. But I think
Tulsi, too. But I think they'll be less antagonistic to Tulsi than they will be to RFKJ. So,
and I think they'll make it through. I think I agree with you. Matt Gaetz is going to get the brunt of it. And specifically because we have some wishy-washies in the Senate. Collins and
Markowski.
Yeah,
she's already said and been like, nah, this isn't going to happen.
So
for Matt Gaetz. So
now, I will say that we just had that vote for Senate leadership, and it was Thune that won. A lot of people were hoping it was going to be Scott. I would say that if you're going to rank them, Scott was the most pro-MAGA, Thune would have been second. And
right. Thune was the best pick of the remaining two. So
yeah. So, and he has he was on Fox News, I believe, last night, and he specifically said that he is supportive of Trump, and he said all options are on the table, including a recess appointment. Hopefully it doesn't go that way.
So you've said that you would do recess appointments if it came to that. What's the threshold for getting to that point for recess appointments?
Well, what I said is, Brett, and I think this is that all options are on the table, including recess appointments. Hopefully it doesn't get to that, but we'll find out fairly quickly whether the Democrats want to play ball or not. And I think part of it is getting these folks, we'll start having confirmation hearings as soon as the new Senate is sworn in January. President takes the oath of office January 20th. By the time he takes the oath of office, hopefully a lot of those nominees will be through their confirmation hearings and will be ready to act on them on the Senate floor. And then it's a question of how much do the Democrats resist or object or try to block those nominations from going forward. And we're going to grind them out. I mean, we're just going to keep consistently moving, and we'll see what kind of cooperation we get. And then we'll, you know, like I said, we'll make decisions about where do we go from there.
So he said specifically that if there is too much push and opposition in regards to these appointments, that they might do recess appointment. And just to give you guys a quick explanation of what a recess appointment is, it's when the Senate goes to recess or is forced to go to recess for a minimum of 10 days. And during that time, the president is allowed to make a recess appointment, which does not require. Now, he will eventually have to go through confirmation, but you're pushing the confirmations, I think until the next session. And what ends up happening is that they'll just continue doing a strategic recess in order to be able to maintain that person in that appointed position. And eventually, if you do have to go and push through confirmation, I think there's like a 2-year mark where they actually do have to go through confirmation. So
they're kind of there, and it's like, okay, fine, just confirm him, whatever.
Exactly.
Thomas Massie was caught on video. Someone, I shared it the other night, where they asked, what do you think of Matt Gaetz? And he's like, it's the recess appointment. Deal with it. He's going to be your attorney general. And like, basically, stop asking me questions. So, I mean,
so we'll see how that pans out. Now, mind you, none of this, we're not going to know any of this until after the inauguration, because none of these people go through their confirmation or or anything like that until after the inauguration. So we still got
so much to look forward to.
2 months.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, inauguration, confirmation hearings. Like, it can't get any better.
Now, to wrap us up specifically on this whole cabinet talk, we still have 2 high-profile appointments that have not been announced. Now, we have had some other additional ones, like the deputy attorney general under Matt Gaetz is going to be Todd Blanche. He is considered like a bulldog attorney. He has Todd, and this is a quote from his press release, Todd is an excellent attorney who will be a crucial leader in the Justice Department, fixing what has been broken in a broken system of justice for far too long. Todd prosecuted gangs and other federal crimes as chief in the Southern District of New York. So that is who's going to be under Matt Gaetz if they both get confirmed. Those other appointments are kind of popping up, but they're not quite as high profile as the director of the FBI and press secretary.
I hope they both come out today. I am just so excited.
Now, the one that is getting floated as director of FBI is Kash Patel, which,
yay,
I am all here for. Now, by the way, remember when we did the episode with Blake that we were like predicting our cabinet picks. I did have Kash Patel in one of these departments. I
either
was like,
CIA or FBI.
Or FBI or something like that. Maybe even Attorney General. But I was like, that would be, I never expected. When I heard, I would not in a million years have expected Matt Gaetz. Okay.
No. It came, I thought it was a, when I was driving, I had just parked to walk into our local library for an orchestra performance for one of my daughters plays violin. And I happened to open my phone and it's just flood of pictures of Matt Gaetz's face and Attorney General. And I was like, what? What? Like, it just caught me off guard big time.
I had the TV playing. I would not have. I gasped. My husband was like, what? What's going on? Like,
what's
I
wrong?
Was just in shock. So, but.
Right.
We already talked about that. So Kash Patel is being floated as director of FBI. Which I would be very excited about. He helped.
I would too, but that will be an interesting confirmation hearing too. I can see that them really pushing back on Kash Patel.
Well, and he worked side by side with Devin Nunes when investigating all of this Russia collusion allegations. And he was one of the ones that helped spearhead the corruption within the FBI and exposing how like Peter Stock was coordinating behind the scenes to move against Trump and the fact that the Russia collusion narrative was fabricated within the intelligence community. So he was one of those that helped expose that. So needless to say.
And he was on Sean Ryan's show as well and basically kind of created the idea of the Department of Government Efficiency on that show. He was like, this is what we need. We need, you can call it whatever you want. You can call it a department or whatever, but we need to be open, honest, everything needs to be open source. Everybody needs to be able to see what is going on. We need more transparency. He basically set up like the DOGE for Elon and Vivek. So it's all coming
it's
together.
It's all intertwined. So needless to say, considering his background, him being director of FBI would be another disruptor.
Chef's kiss. Yeah. Oh, it would be great. The meltdown would be complete.
Yes. So, but we'll see who actually gets called. It would be awesome as like a Friday surprise. We get that announcement and also press secretary. So press secretary is a very...
Karine Jean-Pierre. That's
yes,
who it is.
That's so who it is.
Anyone would be better than the current one.
Kayleigh McEnany and Sarah Huckabee Smith, and also Sean Spicer for a very short amount of time, previously served under Trump as press secretary. We all remember Kayleigh with her giant binder, and we all loved Kayleigh and her binder.
Well, because she's such a small little person, so I think any binder would look big.
Binder.
But she especially would bring out these enormous binders every single time. I was like, what is in that? I want to see.
So now some people have floated, would Kayleigh come back? I don't think so. She has young children. She now has a morning show on Fox News, which makes it manageable when you have a young family.
And I think once you get out of there, I mean, they were so awful to her when she was there. I think she probably got some fresh air and was like, no, it's okay. I was there, been there, done
that. And that position is a very high stress position. So much so that traditionally a press secretary doesn't last more than 2 years.
Yeah.
So
how has Karine Jean-Pierre been there? I mean, she was there the entire presidency, right?
No, remember, we'll circle back, was there
before. Oh, Jen Psaki. That's right. Yes. That's right. But I feel like KJP has been there for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's felt like a million years, if I'm honest.
So I don't know who's going to be press secretary. I mean, people are floating. Jeez, I just hit the microphone. People are floating. I have a tendency, you guys can't see me, but I flail my arms a lot. Anyways, a lot of people have been floating like ideal, like
Tucker Carlson,
Megyn Kelly. Look, I have a strong opinion on that. Leave them where they are. Leave them alone. Okay. We're the right wing media, whatever it is that the left is calling it, is dominating right now. Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly are big parts of that. They are very important where they are at. Would it be entertaining to see Tucker Carlson laugh in people's faces and Megyn Kelly
it would
destroy
be great.
Them?
I would love it. I would love it. Although I do have to say, Tucker Carlson, the more he goes into this zone that he's in right now, it's good. I think that if he had that kind of position, it would be less like laughing and he would get angry. I sense him being less and less satisfied with the direction our country is going in, direction of the world, I think he would just be maybe mad. Well, I would love someone like Ben Shapiro because, and he wouldn't do
it.
He would
never do it either.
Never, ever. But he's just so sharp and so quick on his feet. He'd shut it down. They would be like 10 minutes every time.
Yeah.
This is what's happening. Don't ask me dumb questions. and break.
Well, let's be honest that the position of press secretary is to spin and frankly, sometimes, especially in this last administration, to lie.
Yeah.
And someone, you have to be really good at that. And so I wouldn't necessarily.
Like Jen Psaki was good at her job.
And I don't see Tucker or Megyn Kelly or Ben Shapiro being individuals that want to do something like that.
Right.
So I don't know who's going to be chosen as press secretary.
I have no idea that
one of the front runners is a woman called Carolyn Leavitt. And if you don't know who she is the spokesperson for the Trump transition team. So you've probably seen her on the news. You just don't know who she is. Another one that was being floated was Trump's attorney. I forgot her first name. Abba is her last name. Yeah. She said she's already pulled herself from the running. My guess is that she was told that that's probably not going to be her position. And she openly pulled herself from the running. So I have no idea who's going to be press secretary. Okay. We'll see what happens.
No clue.
I do know that they have to have a spine of steel and to be really sharp to take on the press during a press Trump presidency. So
I'm very sad that we're going to be losing the sparring between Peter Ducey and
maybe it'll be Peter Ducey.
I think he'd be great.
I mean, he knows exactly
how to deal with the press. So, yeah. And he's one of those people that he's can totally be confrontational when he needs to be, but he does it. And then I can even see Karine Jean-Pierre, he really goes to battle with her every single time. But then he's just nice. Like, I can just see her being like, oh, you are so annoying, but actually kind of liking him.
Another
he's likable.
Is Ken Jennings.
Yeah, he'd be great.
From CNN. That
would be an upgrade, honestly.
Yeah,
because they just tear him apart. He's bringing the fire every single panel. Every time.
I don't know. We'll see who they end up
picking. Wait, no. Scott Jennings.
Who did
Ken
I say?
Jennings. You say Ken, that's the guy that won Jeopardy. Ken Jennings.
Oh my gosh.
Scott Jennings, I think. Yes.
What time is it? It's so early. It's funny that I screwed up his name because I talk about him all the time.
I know.
So, but that is kind of where the cabinet sits right now. I am loving this entire process. I think it's a lot of fun.
It's really fun, yes.
I think we earned this.
I think so too. It's like a little early Christmas gift and provides us lots of fun content to talk about. No. It's just.
Well, and it's not over because
we
still have to go through confirmation. So there's plenty to go out there. I have mixed feelings about the whole recess appointment thing because yes, I want them to go through, but also I want confirmation hearings just for the reality show of it. But
yep.
I don't know. We'll see.
We can't get everything we want. It's been a good couple weeks for us.
It's not about us, Rachel. It's about the country.
It is about our podcast. And we need we need confirmation hearing coverage.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and wrap that up. I think anything else to add? Any other opinions, questions, thoughts? We would love to hear from you. What do you think about these cabinet appointments? Do you like them? Do you hate them? Who were you rooting for? Who are you disappointed in?
Have you ever watched a confirmation hearing before? I swear, like only Trump could make confirmation hearings super exciting.
Well, not confirmation nominations. We're not in confirmation hearings yet.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is
upcoming.
Even half as interesting as the nominations have been. Like only Trump could get America excited about this kind of stuff. I have friends who have never once talked to me about politics. But they know what I do, and I'm getting texts like, hey, did you hear about the pick for, like, Homeland Security? I'm like, what? You're paying attention? They're like, yes, this is fascinating. I'm like, I know.
It's wild. It's been a good time. But we're going to go ahead and wrap today's episode of Campaign Games. Of course, if you've enjoyed this episode, make sure you give us a follow, give us a 5-star rating, leave a lovely comment. We also want to hear your thoughts, so send us DMs. If you share our content, make sure that you tag us because then we'll share it back because sharing is caring. And of course, you're going to do it because we are your new favorite podcast. So that's it. We're going to call it a wrap. So thanks for tuning in. We will catch you on our next episode, which is Wednesday of Campaign Games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wednesday. Today's Friday.
I'm still in like election mode where I'm like, are we going to podcast every single day? Because something new was happening every day.
Who knows? If something breaks, we might pop in with an unfiltered episode. There's always that anticipation. We like to keep you on your toes.
Those are fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're a good time. So, but that's it. And I guess we're out. So bye.
All right. Bye.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.